First subject for discussion, Sarah Bernhardt, one of the most famous names in the history of the theater. Our guest, Cornelia Otis Skinner. I'm your host, Barry Nelson. Welcome. Let's get right into the cabaret with King Richard's Flugel Nights. Agent 00 Breck has a suds bomb for you. But you don't have to duck, it's only shampoo. And so gentle to hair that the whole family will be looking just swell. Try it, you'll see. That big sudsy bomb is Breck Concentrate. What a shampoo, it makes you feel great. In each plastic tube at a price that's quite low is Breck quality for a gal or her beau. Just a dab of shampoo, some water, then wow, Breck Concentrate lathers up with a pow. A bomb full of suds is a feeling that's great with the gentle power of Breck Concentrate. The Divine Sarah, why was she? The reasons must have been many because her name has endured, and if anything, the legend has grown. Now, Cornelia Otis Skinner has written a new book about the famous actress titled Madam Sarah. Ben Grauer interviewed the author for Monitor.
Miss Skinner, let's look at the lady who's the central figure of your book, Madam Sarah. Now, as to her life, she made many farewell tours.
She made many farewell tours. She had nine American tours, and the last five were farewell.
And as to her personal life?
Well, that was tempestuous, that was eccentric, that was fantastic, too.
She was married, I believe.
She was married disastrously to a young Greek diplomat who was absolutely no good, who was many years her junior, and she was very indulgent with him, and he was just a plain rotter. He was also a morphine addict.
Nothing good there.
No.
Sparing the husband, there were many, many lovers.
Oh, many lovers. Well, her mother had hardly set her a shining example of morality, and I think...
Well, maybe set her an example which she emulated.
Well, no, because she never had anything of the courtesan about her. She took a lover, she took him because he attracted her mentally and physically, and generally intellectually. They were men of distinction.
Frequently, without naming names, her leading man.
Yes, that seemed to be sort of the idea of going on tour, that the leading man, that were doubled in brass.
And personally, she had a piquant look to her, but you wouldn't call her a beauty.
No, she never was a beauty. As someone said, she could put on beauty like a garment. Mm-hmm. She just would choose to look young or beautiful or even old.
The turn of the century, Frenchmen, if not today, liked a plump girl.
Yes, and she was grotesquely thin for those days. And also, apropos of her making up all these stories, Dumas Fils, who wrote The Lady of the Camellias, which is erroneously called Camille, said, you know, she's such a liar, she may even be fat.
Wasn't there an anecdote about rain?
Oh, yes. There were all sorts of stories, like an empty carriage drove up to the Comédie Française and Sarah Bernhardt got out. And she's so thin that she never needs to carry an umbrella because she walks between the drops of rain.
In other words, there was around her... Oh, we've left out another part of her, important part of her, the Bernhardt legend, the fact that she had a wooden leg.
She never wore a wooden leg. Her leg was amputated in 1915. And she was very old.
She had had a...
She was 71 then. And it was amputated up the hip because it had become gangrenous.
Yeah.
And, of course, the war had set in then. She went down to Bordeaux to have it amputated. And after that, she tried a wooden leg, but she threw it away in rage. And she had herself carried in a sort of a, like a 17th century, 18th century litter. It was a litter chair with two shafts and a man carrying the front and someone carrying the back.
And went around the world?
She went up to the front line trenches and recited for the poilus in that during the First World War.
And then made her last...
She came over here in 1916, 1917 and played a vaudeville circuit under the aegis of Martin Beck. Playing short scenes from plays in which she didn't have to move around, but she'd stand up, she'd balance on that other leg. Extraordinary.
It adds up to a fabulous...
Courage, an incredible courage, incredible zest for living, incredible energy. And never satisfied, really. She never was complacent about her great art. She always thought she could do better. And then she was always afraid of disappointing her audience.
Miss Skinner, as I talk to you, I sense you're drenched with the legend and the actuality of science.
Well,
life.
You can't work on a subject like that, as compelling as that, for 4 years without being drenched in the legend and the stories and things.
Thank you so much, Cornelia. It's reporting for Monitor.
There were those who believed Sarah Bernhardt was so great an actress she could make people cry just by reading the telephone book aloud. And they say that once she did just that, and people did cry.
Of course, she read in her native tongue, French. Back to English now. There is nothing like a lark. It's America's most popular new cigarette. Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today. Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today. Have a lark today. There's nothing, nothing, nothing like a lark. Lark has an inner chamber of charcoal granules for a taste people really like. Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today. Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today. Have a lark today. There is nothing like a lark. Have one. By Frankie Randall on the Monitor Beacon.
reason in the world to drink beer.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis. And at 20 minutes after the hour, this is Barry Nelson introducing Monitor Music. It's Jane Morgan and Kiss Tomorrow Goodbye.
Goodbye, my love. I know we're through. Tonight will be my last with you. Don't say a word. Don't even try. It's best that we kiss. Tomorrow, goodbye.
Science, savior of the ski industry. Monitor Sports is brought to you by the entire family of Winn's products that keep your car going strong.
La, 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 la.
Presenting the Winn Oil Company Chorale under the direction of John Philip Azusa. With special program notes by Mr. Keenan Winn.
Thank you. This is Keenan Winn. I'd like to point out, first of all, that though my name is also spelled W-Y-N-N, I'm not related to the Winn Oil Company people of Azusa. I do know about Winn's products, however. I've used them in automobile, motorcycle, and hydroplane competition, as well as in my airplane and in my family cars. They're good. Winn's famous friction proofing.
Roofing.
Winn's engine tune-up. Winn's new charge. And many more. All designed to keep your car going strong by the Winn Oil Company of Azusa.
Eastern skiers have been moaning that there hasn't been a good big snow since the Christmas holidays. But where and when it's been cold enough, science has bailed skiers out with artificial snow, courtesy of the Larchmont Engineering Company of Lexington, Massachusetts. A report from Larchmont President Joe Tropiano, who spoke to Howard T. Nielsen of station WCSN, Portland, Maine.
Joe Tropiano, is your snow as good as Mother Nature's?
Well, according to skiers and ski area operators, they like the man-made snow in that it lasts longer and it stays uniform all the time while they're skiing.
What's the difference between man-made, you say, and Mother Nature's?
Actually, man-made snow is a tighter snow, and it packs well, and it holds up on warm temperatures much better than nature's snow.
Now, as far as I know, you're the only one making snow this way. Why?
Well, actually, there's no one else that's been too interested in the ski business because it's a rough job in development. However, the main reason why Larchmont is predominant in snowmaking is that we do have a process patent, which is the method used in making the snow.
What is the basic element in this patent?
The basic element in the patent is the use of water and air to make snow in cold temperatures.
How did you first discover how to make snow?
It was an accident in which we were attempting to keep citrus groves from freezing. And our procedure was to use clouds in the event of a frosty night to protect these trees. However, one night when we were doing the experimenting, we found that the clouds froze and the whole ground was covered with snow. So from there on in, we were putting snow on ski slopes for people to ski.
Who was the first one to realize the value of this? Were any of you skiers at that time?
Actually, the first one to realize the value of this at the early days was a newspaper man in Boston, Henry Moore. He brought it to our attention that skiers needed it, and so we rolled up our sleeves and made this snow available to skiers.
And now you sell snowmaking machines all over the United States and in Europe now, too?
Yes, we have systems in Europe, Australia, Korea, Japan, Alaska, Canada, and the United States.
There are other types of artificial skiing material, chemically poured over the slope or laid upon the slope in forms of mats. Do you think this is going to take the place of man-made or Mother Nature?
Well, I don't know whether it will take the place of man-made or Mother Nature. It looks like it will be a very good idea for people to ski in the summer. However, recently I found a young boy in Vermont who had invented a ski that he can use in the summertime right on grass. This looks like this might be an interesting thing for you to watch.
What's the highest temperature at which you can make snow?
Well, we guarantee that at the temperatures of 28 degrees Fahrenheit that you can make snow.
Thank you, Joe Tropiano. This is Howard Nielsen for Monitor Sports.
There won't be any snow at Palm Springs, California next weekend, artificial or real, but there will be golf, and you'll be able to hear it on Monitor, the Bob Hope Desert Classic. Now a word from RCA Victor.
Money, money, money! What great values I have for you! I'm the RCA Victor Value Man. Right now, I'm at your RCA Victor dealers during RCA Victor Value Days. Values by the storeful on new 1967 RCA Victor color TVs, on new radios, tape recorders, and stereo. Look for me, the Value Man, at your RCA Victor dealers. I have values galore for you.
Marimba Band and the Cry of the Wild Goose flying your way on NBC stations all across the country. In Evansville, Indiana, you hear us on WGBF. And you'll hear from your own station now, and then we'll all get together again. This is Barry Nelson for Monitor, reminding you...
This is Joe Garagiola. Join Frank Dill and me next weekend for coverage of golf's annual Bob Hope Desert Classic on NBC Radio and Television.
Mardi Gras is coming, and you'll hear it about 3 minutes from now. I'm Barry Nelson here on the Monitor Float, along with Al Capp and the singing couple Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet, who claim the honeymoon is over.
When your husband doesn't touch your best dessert, When you find the purple lipstick on his shirt, then, my dear, it's clear the honeymoon is over, and you better be on the alert.
When your wife decides that she should wear the pants, when she puts you down each time she gets the chance, then, my dear, it's clear the honeymoon is over, and you'd better search for some romance. Time you saw your old trusty
nothing like a lark.
Lark has a good, easy taste.
Lark has an inner chamber of charcoal granules for a taste people really like.
I think they're the nicest cigarette there is.
Right. There's nothing like a lark.
There is nothing like a lark. It's America's most popular new cigarette.
This Tuesday has many names. Pancake Tuesday, Shrove Tuesday, and Fat Tuesday. Whatever it's called, it's the day before the beginning of Lent and the final, gayest day of the Mardi Gras celebration. In New Orleans, the parties began this year the day after Christmas, and they've been going on ever since. As for what's in store for Tuesday's big carnival parade, here's a report from Mel Levitt in New Orleans.
This is carnival season in old New Orleans. Between now and February 7th, various independent clubs or crews will stage 25 major street parades. A parade like this one, with as many as 20 elaborate floats and 24 or more marching units, will cost upwards of $50,000 to build. So carnival, you can see, is a big business for some people. People such as Blaine Kern. Blaine builds as many as 20 parades each year, working year-round with a staff of 20 men.
Well, for instance, in New Orleans, I build probably 150 floats here alone, or more than that, 200 floats. And in Italy, for instance, in their carnival, they only have eight floats in the whole country. They're more elaborate, they're much larger floats, but we, you know, it's so much bigger here, and then the state subsidizes, say, the Italian carnival, or even the German carnival and all. And yet here it's private, secret societies, organizations that it's privately financed. And this is the thing. It's their party, and the fact that tourists come, this is well and good, but they couldn't care less.
Now, Mardi Gras, of course, is the apex, the climax of the whole celebration. It has been called the greatest free show on earth. I think it's probably the greatest audience participation show I've ever seen. There's something different about this, too, isn't there?
Oh, gosh, yes. Each organization here competes in a sense with each other. They try to outdo each other. And the people themselves all feel that, well, this is ours. The kids, you look, the young lovers, you see them out waiting for the parades. They're masking. I've never seen any other place where the populace itself actually gets into the act by putting on these ridiculous heads, fantastic costumes. Some people take months, all year even, to make a costume that they're going to use for a few hours. And I'm talking about business people, bankers, garbage men. Everybody gets into the act.
Blaine Kern has built all sorts of fantastic things, including a 24-foot replica of King Kong, an animated gorilla that walked, talked, breathed fire, and beat its chest while five men inside worked the controls. Each parade and carnival ball has a king, a queen, and a court, and at least 125 costume maskers. Blaine is also in the crown and scepter business. He imports masks and sells coins and such, which the maskers on the floats throw to the masses down below.
You know, in traveling, looking for ideas all over Europe and the world, I went into Austria, and this is the center of the rhinestone business and the center of the glass industry for over 1,000 years in Europe. Czechoslovakia, I don't do any business with the Czechs, with the communists, but there's a city there, Kablanza, in Czechoslovakia, make the most beautiful glass work, and so they did the, I lined up with them, and they make the most fantastic crowns, so you can have tiaras or, say, a scepter or something, or a crown wreath, say, for a modern Caesar, or something for a Cleopatra of modern day, or rather, a modern day counterpart made up. And we've done that for hundreds of organizations, not only here, but throughout the country.
I'm coming in and I want a nice, attractive crown for tomorrow. What kind of a price range could you give?
Well, you could get a queen's crown from anywhere from $50 to $400, maybe even $500 if you want something custom made, and really, you can go to $1,000.
If Ever I Cease to Love is the Mardi Gras song, and it'll be played at least 1,000 times Mardi Gras Day as the official Rex bandwagon rolls. Between now and then, however, there will be 24 other street parades, day and night, and 30 costume balls, costing more than $1 million, with at least $750,000 in baubles, beads, and souvenir coins being literally thrown away. This is Mel Levitt reporting from New Orleans and returning you to Monitor.
All those parties. Must be I haven't been getting all my mail. None of the invitations have arrived yet. Well, you're invited to listen to the Letterman singing Our Winter Love.
You're on the Monitor Beacon.
Monitor music now, Tony Bennett, and What Makes It Happen?
What
makes it happen. What brings the wonder? What starts the thunder? You hear in your heart what makes the magic that makes life worthwhile, keeps you on earth while you're somewhere far. One day you're nothing, next day you're something. Because of someone, you happen to see. What makes it happen? What makes love happen?
Is nothing like a lark. It's America's most popular new cigarette.
Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today.
I like the taste. Simple as that.
Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today.
I think everybody who smokes should try a lark.
There's nothing, nothing, nothing like a lark.
Lark has an inner chamber of charcoal granules for a taste people really like.
Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today.
Great smoke. Glad I changed.
Hey, there's nothing like a lark.
Have a lark today.
There is nothing like a lark. Have one.
Here's Wednesday's Child by the Ray Conniff Group.
Smile just for me, you smile.
Cap, the talking cartoonist, is billed as Monitor's expert on nothing with opinions on everything. However, he is an expert look at some of our basic and continuing problems. Here's Al Cap.
It's always been mighty easy to shut up any pest who grumbles at billions in welfare money that he and his fellow pests have to work for is being paid out to able-bodied bums who won't work. You shut up guys like that by asking them if they'd rather let fellow Americans starve to death merely because society had failed to train them to do a job or because employers refused to hire them for such un-American reasons as race or religion. Well, it isn't easy to shut up those grumblers anymore. Not in New York City, it isn't. Daily News in New York spoiled it all by sending out a team, a photographer and a reporter, to investigate New York's employment agencies. They came back with photographs and reports of agencies with signs. Those were jobs that lacked dignity. Well, that shut up the grumblers. Until, about 2 seconds later, it occurred to them that anyone who considered it more dignified to live off the work of his neighbors than to go to work himself was as much of a bum as anyone who defended him. And they began grumbling again, and so the welfare folks had to explain things all over again. They stated that a mere 8,500 of the over 500,000 on welfare in New York City were physically able to work, and even those mere 8,500 were too ill to work full time. The grumblers burst out laughing. But it was not a wholesome sound. Not entirely. There was a note of doubt in their merriment. Doubt that a 500,000 welfare takers who were too sick to work were healthy enough to picket and to march, to stop traffic all through the city, all through the year, with their sit-ins and lie-downs and bend-overs. Well, all their nastiness isn't going to get the grumblers very far in any effort to reduce the welfare load that's making New York City and so many other cities in America much too rich for the blood of the average working guy. They'd realize that if they'd noticed the little story buried in the back pages of the New York Times. 273 employees at one of New York's countless welfare setups were demanding raises because their salaries ran up to only $13,050 a year. Now, asking them to help put more welfare takers to work is like asking a guy with an unlimited expense account to take the oath of abstinence.
Al Kemp, in his dignified job as a talking cartoonist, heard here every weekend on Monitor.
Thank you.
Russ Jankowski and the spy with the cold nose must be working in the Midwest this week, where noses were colder than ever and covered with snow. This is Barry Nelson for Monitor, reminding you that NBC News in the Hour is next. Big Town USA, crossroads of the world, capital of business, commerce, and industry. Most heavily populated area of the United States. Stretching from Pennsylvania to Connecticut and Rhode Island. From upstate New York to southern New Jersey. Big Town, moving, living, breathing. Big Town, changing from moment to moment. Big Town, happening 24 hours a day. And the sound of Big Town happening is yours on WNBC, the voice of Big Town USA, on Fortune Phone with me, Sterling Yates, weekdays at 10 and again at 4. Because he's far out, Lee Leonard reaches you. Afternoons at 1 on the big voice of Big Town USA, WNBC, New York.